Episode 35 with Mark Shapiro.
Where meditation meets daily life, this is the Meditation Freedom Podcast.
You enter the forest at the darkest point where there is no path. Where there is a way or path, it is someone else's path. You are not on your own path. If you follow someone else's way, you are not going to realize your potential. We're not on our journey to save the world, but to save ourselves. But in doing that, you save the world. The influence of a vital person vitalizes. Joseph Campbell. Thank you so much for tuning into the Meditation Freedom Podcast. My name is Siko Rote, and I'm your host. This podcast is all about meditation, mindfulness, why we do it, and how we incorporate that, how we integrate that into our daily lives. And on this podcast, I talk to various teachers, students of this practice, and they may all be coming from totally different paths and using different pathways into that present moment, that now awareness, and into realizing wisdom and understanding and compassion, and then bringing that into their daily lives. So because we're all unique, we're also on unique paths. And if we're on somebody else's path, as the quote earlier said, then we're in trouble. And the same can be said for authenticity. If we're trying to be something else or not fully stretching into who we already are, then we've got trouble. Thich Nhat Hanh, one of the teachers that Christina and I have had the privilege of practicing with, Thich Nhat Hanh said, "An oak tree is an oak tree. That is all it has to do. If an oak tree is less than an oak tree, then we're all in trouble." And he's talked about humans having a tendency to not be fully themselves, like the way an animal is a squirrel, or a dog is a dog. But as humans have not fully stretched into who we are uniquely, and authenticity wouldn't be a word in our vocabulary if there wasn't so much inauthenticity. Today we've got a great interview with someone who's also exploring and investigating authenticity by creating a podcast about it. Now Mark's got an interesting change of career as well, similar to Jason Garner that we had on a few weeks ago. Mark too was on the corporate ladder or fast lane towards corporate success by being a marketing director at Showtime Networks. But he too left a comfy six-figure corporate job and is now on a mission to bring more authenticity to the world, with a goal to inspire and empower 100,000 people, as he puts it, to be true to themselves and live an epic life they're proud of. He is the host of the One and Only podcast, and you can find it on iTunes, and I'll put links on that on the show notes, meditationfreedom.com/35. He's also creator of the BU Authenticity Workshop, transformational trainer, coach, speaker, and he's also a vocal Alzheimer advocate. So with that, let's get right into the interview with Mark Shapiro, host of the One and Only podcast. Well, thank you so much, Mark, for joining me on the Meditation Freedom podcast.
My pleasure. Thanks for having me.
One of the things I like to do as a way to get to know the guest is to just ask you, how did you get to a meditation practice? How did you decide to do a contemplative or more inward-looking practice?
Sure. It was, first of all, it was something that I never thought was possible for myself. I'm like many out there that thought that I couldn't meditate because I had so many thoughts always going through my mind. And when I just kept hearing it over and over again, how fantastic meditation was, it became appealing to me. But I started doing some transformational workshops where meditation was part of the workshop. And so because I was at the workshop, I just did meditation, and I really fell in love with it quickly, and started my practice right then and there. And I could go on all day about it, but I find it so valuable because I consider myself to be an emotional and sensitive man. Mm-hmm. I'm flexible. I like to be very present to others around me. And if I'm not checking in with myself, it's easy for me to give my power away to others. So with meditation, it allows me to ground myself and my breath and who I am, and to truly be myself versus to be one with the wind,
right?
With whoever else I'm with.
Yeah, and we'll get to the part about authenticity, because it sounds like there's definitely a connection there. Was there like a moment when you were practicing meditation where you went, where something clicked for you and you thought, you know, this is a practice that really helps me be more centered, or, you know, whatever you were experiencing, was there like a particular moment?
There was, and I'd been meditating for a long time before I had that moment, but I was doing a sound bath and I went deeper than I ever have into a meditative state. And I felt so light and clear and in touch with myself, such a peace. I was able to be in touch with all the things that were happening in my life, particularly in my love life at the time, as well as in my career. But I was able to see them from a different trajectory.
Mm-hmm.
And I saw them, but wasn't just so incredibly influenced the way that I am with my eyes open. I was able to just watch them as they were these things in my head, these thoughts as they were moving down the street.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, interesting. And for those of you, listening who don't know what a sound bath is, because that's something that I didn't realize what it was until I came to Southern California. So maybe you can describe a little bit about what that's like.
Yeah, it was really cool. So I'm not even sure what the technology is called that the facilitator was using. Different crystals mixed together with some gongs, mm-hmm. as well as even a little bit of guitar.
Oh, cool.
Yeah, and it was absolutely fantastic. And I aim to go to sound baths on a monthly basis because of that one. And when I did it, I went into such a deep meditative state that for the next week or so, whenever I was meditating, I was able to tap into that place.
Oh, great.
A lot more easily than it usually takes for me to really drop into a deep meditative place.
Mm-hmm.
Start silencing those thoughts a little bit.
Yeah. So the sounds, they help to mitigate the thoughts.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah. Yeah, I've been to a couple as well here, and I just love it. It's beautiful, those Tibetan bowls and the gongs, and it is a beautiful experience.
Yeah, I find it to be very healing and soothing, and it's very easy to surrender to.
Yeah, right.
And that's why I love it so much, that it's easy to focus on, it's light, and to get lost in.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. One of the things I liked about our Zen retreats is that we do chanting, and it's another way, as you say, to let go of the thoughts and become part of the bigger body, which is the community that you're with at the time, which may just be a room full of, you know, with a few people, but it does really allow you to let go of the individual. Sometimes they call it the trance of thoughts or the. So yeah, that's a wonderful way for folks who like music as a way to as a different way to introduce them to meditation. Yeah,
that must be why I love it so much. Because I love music so much.
Yeah, and what kind of practice do you do? You know, what does your practice look like now? Your meditation practice?
It's pretty unregimented, and I aim to meditate at least 3 to 4 days a week. Ideally, I would do it 7 days a week, but sometimes I find it challenging to squeeze in the time, which is disappointing because it is a priority for me. But I usually sit outside my house on my front deck and get comfortable and close my eyes for 15 to 20 minutes.
Yeah. And do you pay attention to your breath or mm-hmm. listen to the birds, or what's that like?
Yeah, you nailed it. It's those two things exactly. Yeah. And if there's street traffic, I do live on a quiet street, but if there's birds or someone walking their dog or a lawnmower, that's just part of it. I just I continue to listen to it. And I found that present to whatever sounds are coming my way, I'm okay with. And so if I'm out in a public space and I'm feeling a little overwhelmed and feeling a little anxious, I'll just continue. I'll just meditate. I'll close my eyes and meditate, even if there's a very noisy highway next to me, or if I'm at a mall.
Right.
And I still find that I'm able to drop into a meditative space, which I definitely couldn't have done when I started meditating a couple of years ago.
Right. So you kind of mentioned there, you're bringing it into parts of your day when it's not necessarily scheduled. So do you practice mindfulness as part of that?
Yeah. Explain what you have in mind in terms of mindfulness, because that means so many different things to me.
Well, so you're paying it when you're sitting outside and you're listening to the birds and, mm-hmm. and whatever is happening. That's a mindfulness of the now, of the present moment. So have you found that when you go into your daily life and your routines, that you also notice more mindfulness of the present wherever you are?
Yeah, definitely. And it's usually when I'm feeling anxiety within me, that is the reminder that it's time to take a breath and to maybe meditate for a second, but to reground myself in that present moment.
Oh, that's great. Yeah. Yeah. Anchoring yourself into the present. Yeah.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. Whenever I feel anxiety, I'm living in the future or living in the past. And it's just a reminder that it's like, all right, what's around me? What's so beautiful that I can just be appreciative about?
Right. So gratitude is also part of your practice.
Definitely.
Yeah. And I noticed I listened to one of your episodes, you talked about the Burning Man. And how that also helps you learn more about present moment awareness.
Definitely.
You said there's a lot of stimuli, whereas in the day-to-day life, sometimes it's more easy to go into, what's the words you used?
I think I used either autopilot or a default mode.
Right, right.
Yeah, I do find, I love Burning Man. I recommend for anyone to check it out at some point just because it's so incredibly unique and magical. And I always learn so many lessons. Burning Man, I would say, you experience a year's worth of emotions in 1 week.
That's amazing, yeah.
And which is, like I said, the only way to even be able to really comprehend what I'm saying is to check it out. But there's so much stimuli everywhere and there's so much synchronicity that I'm open to all of the possibilities that present themselves. So I think as I mentioned in that podcast episode, that if I'm waiting in line for something at Burning Man, I'm very likely to communicate with the people who are in line with me versus if I'm at a grocery store just picking up some eggs, I might not mingle with the person in front of me or behind me in line because I'm not open to the possibilities that exist in that situation because it's just a task for me to get eggs and I might even be on my phone versus being open to the synchronicities of life. And that's the lesson that I learned at Burning Man. And I do my best to apply that in my everyday life as a result.
Yeah. Well, there are some of the things that you've mentioned a couple of things here, but are there some other really interesting things that you've learned as a result of Burning Man that you brought back into your day-to-day life?
Definitely. Two others that I want to highlight are giving for the sake of giving. So at Burning Man, it's a gifting economy. There is nothing for sale there except for coffee and ice. So you need to bring everything that you're going to need for the week. But what's so magical about it is it's a gifting economy. So people are just giving things to you, expecting nothing in return. So someone will come up to me with a coconut water and it's scorching out and I'm dehydrated. And at the exact right time, someone's got this coconut water
Wow.
that they gift to me. So when you have 70,000 people, all who are in the spirit of giving, that it's a really powerful experience. And it took me a couple of years to really figure out how I could bring back these principles of Burning Man back to my daily life. But after having gone the last 6 years, it's always a focus and intention of mine to give for the sake of giving, expecting nothing in return here at home. I love entertaining people at my house. I love buying extra things and just handing them out, whether it's a favorite book. For example, my good friend Lewis Howes, he's the host of the School of Greatness. He's launching his book next week, and I bought 5 copies, and I'm excited just to give away the other 4 to friends.
That's great.
Yeah. Whoever I meet. So gifting is one of them, one of the big takeaways for me for Burning Man. The other one that I wanted to share is in terms of creativity and contribution. Burning Man, unlike other festivals like a Coachella or just any kind of music and arts festival, mm-hmm. what sets Burning Man aside in that regard is that everyone is a contributor. Everyone is a participant versus, yeah. Yeah, versus at a traditional festival. It's very clear the roles that people play. You've got the performers up on stage. You got the people who are working at the festival. And then you got everyone who is there to experience all the love and the art and the music. What Burning Man, the roles are consistently changing. Everybody is a contributor and everyone brings their artistic expression, gifts, games to Burning Man. So someone could build a climbing wall at Burning Man or bring a trapeze or build a bowling alley. The list goes on and on. The possibilities are endless. And there's also an element of creativity and self-expression mm-hmm. at Burning Man where people are encouraged to try new things. So sometimes I'll walk around just talking in song to random strangers that I meet and I have a blast doing it. So I like to bring that back with me back from Burning Man as well in terms of creating fun activities on the fly and just being free to be myself and have some boyish charm.
Yeah. So it sounds like there's a real sense of freedom at the Burning Man that allows people to uncover parts of themselves that they didn't know they had before.
Absolutely. Yeah. I mean, it's such a powerful experience. It's way more than just a party. Mm-hmm. Sometimes that's a misperception about Burning Man. Oh, it's just a bunch of hippies out in the desert doing drugs and dancing, and it's out of control, total anarchy. And while, yes, it is a big party, it's the biggest and best party I've ever been to, it's a transformational experience. And there's so much available to people who go there to grow in addition to having the best week of the year.
Yeah, yeah, that's my sense too. I wouldn't want to disregard an experiment like that because I've heard the same things you mentioned. Somebody saying, "Oh, they're trashing the desert," and somebody else saying, "It's a bunch of freak. It's a freak show," you know. And that's to me, that's disregarding our need as human beings to experiment and to try things out. You know, because we live in a world where a lot of things aren't working. So, you know. And we need to find out what's, like you said, authenticity is a huge thing. And if we're constricted by all these personas that we got to play and the rules we got, these rules that we've inherited from grandparents and we don't even know why they're there, then to me it's a very important to occasionally to just stop and pause and try something completely different and put away all the rules and just try, be creative.
Well said. And that was what you just shared was exactly my biggest takeaway from my experience at Burning Man this year. And it's something that applies to my whole life in general. And that is to be real with myself and to be real with others. And I've been on this planet now for 33 years. I've had 33 years of experience to see what works in my life, what doesn't work, and to wear all sorts of masks that I found that support me, whether it's the friendly, nice mask or the professional mask or the podcast host mask that I wear. And this year at Burning Man, I was going through an emotional experience. I was in a situation where my best friend and my ex-girlfriend got romantic. They hooked up. And it took a toll on me, and I tried to intellectualize it and tell myself all the things that I knew I was supposed to tell myself, that, it has nothing to do with me, don't take it personal, that this is just a great obstacle that represents an awesome opportunity for my growth, and that I can just let it just slide right off of me. But it really hurt. It mm-hmm. really hurt me, sure. And it caused me to do some deeper work and to really ask myself the question, why does this hurt so bad? What about it hurts so bad? And I realized it had nothing to do with the circumstance of the two people hooking up, but it had to do with other hurt that I had felt in my life. My divorce a couple years ago, it had to do with my dad being really sick with Alzheimer's for the last 15 years. So when I went to that place and when I was truly real with myself, that's when I got to let go of a lot of pain and a lot of hurt that I didn't even realize that I was carrying around.
Wow.
So I got real with myself. That was the first part of the lesson. And then in terms of being real with others, and that's creating a safe space to dig below the surface with those that we love.
Right.
And to not settle for one word answers. So, hey, how you doing? Good.
Yeah.
You know, asking open-ended questions and letting people know, hey, it looks to me like you're going through something. And I just want you to know, whatever that may be, maybe I'm off base, but whatever it may be, I want you to know that I'm here for you. I love you. And if you want to chat with me about anything, I'm here for you.
Yeah, that's wonderful. A real caring way of relating to people instead of a you could almost say, inauthentic way of relating.
Yeah, absolutely. And you alluded to earlier, you were saying all the stuff that is kind of isn't going well in the world. And the way that I look at it is, in order for us to see both what's working and what's not working, we need information. We need to see the entire picture. And there's so much that happens below the surface, mm-hmm. under our feelings. And if we're not sharing our feelings and what we're going through with each other, then how are we supposed to know? How are we supposed to see the whole picture? We're only seeing part of it.
Right. Yeah. And
so I'm a big advocate for creating that space so we can best support one another.
Right. And in a way, you're also sitting outside of your life, reflecting on it from outside in. And that's all, that alone is a good thing. That's kind of what meditation retreats are about, too, is to take a temporary refuge in something in another place, a safe place. And then you can look back. And instead of being in the rush of life or the river of life and never stepping outside and taking a look back in, see what's really going on.
Yeah, absolutely.
Yeah, and I think also with these school shootings, you know, I've had a couple of guests on now about bringing more mindfulness in schools, because what you're talking about here too is deeper connections. And a lot of these shootings are a reflection of, you know, alienation and loneliness and not connecting and us not doing enough to in schools and with each other to connect on a deeper level than just, hey, how you doing?
Yeah, absolutely. And, you know, you mentioned we talk about authenticity, so I'll take this opportunity to jump right in.
Sure.
But by connecting with one another, we give each other the permission to be authentic and to be real and to share what's really going on. And I find that to be incredibly liberating.
Right.
Whenever I've got something brewing inside of me, it feels so good to let it out. Whether it's the fear of this new career path that I've chosen to go in this year, I left a six-figure corporate job at Showtime Networks to be in service of others full-time.
And yeah, that is a scary thing for sure.
It's been more fulfilling than I could ever imagine, and it's going really well, but it's also really damn challenging.
Yeah, yeah.
So I've gone through all the emotions. I continue to go through all the emotions every day. When I woke up this morning, I felt anxiety. I'm like, I'm going to be, you know, on your podcast, and it was early in the morning and I had some anxiety about it.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
But I got out of bed, I got in my groove and meditated and grounded myself in the present, and I was good to go.
Yeah. And you get yourself out of your own way. That's a really good practice too. I know I think I have at least one day a week where I go, oh, gee, you know, this podcast. Why am I doing this? You know? And then, you know, all the other days I go, oh, this is great. I'm so happy that I'm following my heart. And I see you doing that too.
So I totally relate to that.
Yeah.
I always use that doubt and fear as motivation.
It is. Yeah. Yeah.
It's an essential part for me to challenge myself as to how committed I am to my goals and to my dreams. And whenever I get to that place where I'm being really hard on myself and I'm just beating myself up and don't want to get out of bed, I ask myself, well, what have you done? What have you not tried yet? And that always unleashes creativity in me. And I'll come up with 5-10 things that I haven't done yet, whether it's outreach for 5 guests that I want to have on my show, or things that I need to do in order to grow my consulting business, reaching out to companies. And whenever I start listing down those ideas, it's a motivation for me to get back in the game to make it happen.
Yeah, that's great. And what else is, because we're talking about your podcast too, and what made you decide you wanted to do a podcast about authenticity?
It sounds crazy when you say it like that. And I often have that same question to myself. But
no, I think it's actually it's great. I think it's a great great idea to do a podcast about that. And to some extent, my podcast is about authenticity as well. So
yeah, absolutely. Absolutely. So the reason why I have a podcast about authenticity is I was running away from my own authenticity, and I didn't even know it for 30 years of my life. I played it safe. I took the traditional path. I got the corporate job that I was working at for 12 years. I got the marriage that I thought I always wanted. And when that marriage unexpectedly came to an end 3 years ago, I was left back at the drawing board thinking to myself, well, who am I? What's next? What value am I going to create? What am I capable of doing? And I've always had the desire to live an epic, amazing dream life, but I didn't know how the heck I was going to do that. And I knew that I wanted to be my own boss. I knew that I wanted to have my own company. But what kind of company? I didn't have one idea for a product that I'd even want to sell.
Mm-hmm.
And I didn't know what value that I could provide. Meanwhile, I was doing really well in my corporate job. So I got some feedback from others that when I was getting up in front of a group of people, in front of a room, let's say 50, 100 people, that I was coming across as scripted and inauthentic. Lewis Howes, who I mentioned earlier, is a good friend of mine, said to me, Mark, you're an incredibly passionate and loving person, but when you get up in front of the room, you're just all professional, monotone. And that feedback just hit me with a ton of bricks. Because A, it was so true, but B, monotone, that didn't even seem like it was a part of me at all.
Right.
But I was so obsessed with getting it right and looking good that I didn't let myself shine.
Right.
And that example can really be stretched across my entire life. I was playing it safe and so focused on fitting in and looking good and saying whatever I perceived to be the right thing to say versus how I really felt. And little did I know that other people could sense when I was saying something that I didn't truly mean. So that to me is, that was the invitation for me to start practicing and pursuing authenticity. So it became a big part of my core values and something that I've started practicing a couple years ago. And I learned so many valuable lessons. The first thing that I learned is that when I have the courage to express how I really feel and to be myself, that it feels amazing. It feels so good when I say how I really feel. If I want to go dancing, I go dancing and I let my hands flail like crazy, as you can see over Skype here. but I find that when I have the courage to be myself, it builds my confidence. And when my confidence is building up, I feel empowered. And when I'm empowered, I feel like I can go out and do anything. So that's the big first lesson that I've learned about authenticity. And that the second lesson is that when I'm being myself, I don't need to try to fit in.
Right.
I'm naturally going to belong. And that's something that Brené Brown, who's an expert on vulnerability, that she's been saying for years. And I couldn't agree with anymore. And then I've also found that if in every moment I'm choosing to be authentic, saying how I feel, really checking in with myself, that over time, my life is going to resemble this life that I've always wanted. And now that I've been practicing it for a few years, that's what the results pretty much show.
So you're
my own boss now, and I've headed in this direction because It started with me having the courage to be authentic in the moment.
Right. And you're living into this question.
Absolutely. Yeah. And then the fourth lesson that I learned about it is that when I'm being authentic, I create immense value for others, whether creating a space for other people to be real with themselves and real with me, but also that if I express how I really feel to someone, that that could be exceptionally valuable because maybe everybody else is just blowing smoke up their ass.
Yeah, right. Yeah, so you're giving people permission to be more authentic.
Absolutely. Yeah. So those are my big four takeaways that I've learned so far in my practice of authenticity.
That's wonderful. And then with your podcast, you're delving even more into that question because you're asking other people what their sense of authenticity is and what have you, what kind of things have you learned that you didn't know before you started the podcast?
I've learned so much from all my guests. I just had like a moment where I was just fast forwarding through all the episodes that I've recorded in my head as you asked that. The first one that pretty much every person has said on the podcast is that if there's something you want, go out there and do it. Don't wait.
Don't ask
for
permission.
The time is never going to be right. Don't ask for permission either, is something I've heard a number of times. But just to have the courage and to take a risk. And that failure is part of the game. It's part of the process. And that the fear of failure should not be something that deters you. And some things are going to work and some things aren't. And you learn from both what works and what doesn't work.
Mm-hmm. Right, right. Yeah, we've stigmatized failure. And maybe not so much because I'm from Europe originally, and it's even worse there in the old world. I think America is still known for, people creating themselves out of nothing. But even here, there's definitely fear of failure. Fear to look bad or fear to tumble.
Yeah. Definitely. And I have that all the time.
Yeah. And what are some of the practices? Because, this is one of the things I try also is to go into places that are uncomfortable. But I learned that it's a thing that you have to really lean into, because if you just do it once in a while, it's not, it's going to be, you're making it harder on yourself. But if you do it more often, then it's like a muscle. You're tending it and nurturing it, and it allows itself to be stronger.
Yeah, fully. I found myself changing my relationship with fear. Do I still have fear? Yeah, absolutely. I'm human. I'm always going to have fear. But I realized from overcoming so many fears, what's available on the other side of fear. And that is tremendous celebration.
Joy.
And all sorts of new ground and new opportunities. And one of the examples I always love to give when I'm having this conversation about overcoming fears is social anxieties and fears that I used to have. And I used to go to parties and I'd only hang out with and talk with people I went to the party with, mm-hmm. or anyone who integrated themselves with this little crew of people that I went with, because I didn't know what I would talk to other people about. I felt uncomfortable, didn't know where to start. But what I found is when I had the courage to be myself, when I started practicing authenticity and realized that we're all in the same boat, we all have fears, we all have insecurities, that together with just being myself, and now I don't even have to try to meet people at parties. I just naturally find myself having deep, valuable conversations with people and building relationships with tons of people in just a few minutes.
Wow. Yeah. That's
so by pressing through fears and being authentic has directly resulted in a greater amount of amazing relationships in my life.
That's great. And then you also, you teach, you do workshops to help other people uncover or draw out their authenticity. How would you describe that process that you go through with the folks that come to your workshops?
Sure. It's an experiential training and it's about 2.5 hours. And I put everybody through a bunch of exercises where primarily I'm asking thought-provoking questions, such as, if people really knew me, they'd know this about me. Or, these are my biggest fears about sharing how I really feel. Or, how does my life look today in relation to my greatest goals and aspirations? And I'll dig a little bit deeper into that. I'll ask people, for example, on a scale of 1 to 10, how happy are they with the way they spend their time? So if they're totally happy with the way they spend their time, they'd rate themselves a 10. Now, if they rated themselves a 6, I would then ask the follow-up question, well, what does a 10 look like? And then the next question is, all right, what steps do you need to take in order to create that 10 in your life? And I ask that type of question in several different ways across several different areas of life. And it's just a great way for people to check in with themselves to A, measure where they're at in comparison to what they want most, but then also to take a look at how they measure themselves, because someone's 10 might be another person's 2, and it might be valuable for someone to see if they're rating themselves a 2, how hard they are on themselves in comparison to other people.
Yeah, right. And is that a big part of it? People's own inner critic?
Inner critic is huge in conjunction with going through this experiential workshop with so many other people, because it really makes my participants realize, wow, we're all in this together. We all have such similar private conversations mm-hmm. that may or may not serve us. And when we actually get real with one another and share those things, it always makes me feel so much more comfortable and so much less alone.
Yeah, that's great. Yeah. So mm-hmm. it connects everyone under the surface.
Yeah.
We're a very external focused society. So, we always look at other people and we don't realize what might be going on behind that persona. And like you said, if we realize underneath that, they have the same fears and emotions, then it takes away a lot of the separation.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Yeah. I find that is the way to create the deepest relationships, is to get real with one another.
Right.
It's really as simple as that.
Right. Yeah. It's simple, easier said than done.
It is. It requires 2 to tango, clearly. But I always aim to lead by example, and to lead with vulnerability, to lead with authenticity. And I aim to create a space where it's reciprocated.
Mm-hmm.
And sometimes I'm unsuccessful. Sometimes I'll ask people a bunch of open-ended questions and I'll still get met with resistance. And that's okay too.
All right.
It's just not the right time and place.
Sure. Sure. That's great. Yeah. So you're flexible with that.
Mm-hmm.
And then one thing also, because there's a, I know in a group recently that I was in, people were complaining about authenticity, how it was overused. But then I also heard Brené Brown, who you mentioned earlier, mm-hmm. She talked about transparency versus authenticity. And some people confuse authenticity with just, what you kind of see on some social media sometimes, where people just talk about just everything, the most private things, and they think that's authenticity, but that's something totally, to me anyway, that's not the same. That's not the same.
Yeah. Well, what I've learned is that everybody's definition of authenticity is different.
Mm-hmm.
And, what authenticity is real. I've heard people define authenticity as being present.
Mm-hmm.
Not bringing all sorts of other situations in your life into the present moment, that you're just present and open like a tiger in the jungle.
Mm-hmm.
But that's authenticity. And then another way of looking at authenticity is that nothing is authentic, because from the second that we enter this world, we're influenced by conditioning. We live in a civilization. It's not like we're just born into the wild and we're completely authentic. So the word could be used in any which way. And I think, like anything else in life, it's important to have balance. And I look at authenticity as more of a barometer than anything else. And it's a practice.
Right.
And to speak into what you were talking about with Brené Brown in terms of transparency and versus authenticity. Authenticity doesn't have to mean that I need to share absolutely every thought that's on my mind.
Right, right.
Right? Like, yeah. I think I'm like, you know, eligible to have a couple of private thoughts.
Exactly, right.
You know, naturally, when someone asks me a question, any kind of question, it's my natural instinct to want to answer it. And to answer it exactly how I'm feeling, which in general, I don't have to. I can respond with a general answer, or I can even say, out of respect, I'd prefer to keep that to be private. And yeah. That's something that I'm learning through right now, that I don't have to answer every question directly how it's asked to me.
Yeah, yeah. So like you said,
it can still be authentic.
Definitely a practice, yeah.
Yeah.
I know.
Yeah, what about you? That same question.
Yeah, so for me, you know, when I was a teenager, one of the first books that really drew me into finding out who I was, and I was a struggling teenager, I found this book called The Path to the Self, and I don't think there's an English version or an American book with the same name, but it basically means The Path to the Self, and it was by Ramana Maharishi. And because I wanted to know who I was at bottom, you know, not just on the surface, not just, you know, in relation to my parents or this or that, but, you know, the self as in like this from the spiritual sense, the true self, the not just us as individual expressions of that self, but also the larger self, the self that we're all part of, the part that we're just little individual vehicles of. So to me, that's a lifetime exploration, and that's why, you know, I consider myself a student also. You know, I'm studying the mystery because, you know, ultimately, us humans, we don't know the full we don't understand. You know, we don't know where we came from and where we're going, and you know where our boundaries are, and so to me, it's actually a spiritual journey. And the individual part is also important to my teacher's teacher says that we're all at the headwaters of our own unique streams, and so it is very important to me as well that to uncover, you know, my own self and move from my own center, as opposed to, you know, doing what somebody else says or some script or, you know, stepping up the ladder that a career ladder that's not even, you know, that has nothing to do with my own unique talents and stuff.
Mm-hmm.
So yeah, there's two parts of that journey to authenticity for me. There's the spiritual part, you know, where we're all connected to something that is boundless and a mystery. And then there's the individual sense of it as well, our own unique contribution and our own unique expression. You know, like you say, like you call your podcast, the one and only. There's only one Mark and there's only one Seiko expression. So, but we're all connected in the deep end. That's our big self.
So, 100%. Yep. It's our job to be ourselves.
Right.
We're irreplaceable.
Exactly. Yeah. So,
awesome. Yeah, it's been such a pleasure chatting with you, Seiko.
Absolutely. It's great to get to know you better and learn about your podcast. And if folks want to learn more about you, would they go to the One and Only Podcast? And, you know, what's the website for that?
Yeah, so the One and Only Podcast is on iTunes and Stitcher and SoundCloud. But my website is makeyourmarktoday.com. So I'd recommend that as the starting point because that's where everything is, the podcast and information about my coaching and trainings. And I would just love to hear from you. I'm a sponge. And as you said, Seiko, like I'm all about learning and growth. So I'd love to hear your perspective on things as well as any way that I can support you because I've dedicated my life to being in service. So if you think that it would be valuable that we connect and potentially work together, let me know. I'm game.
Okay, great. And so folks can also follow you on Twitter and Facebook, and I'll make sure that I'll have all the links to that as well.
Wonderful. So,
thanks again so much.
Yeah, Seiko, thank you so much for everything that you're doing. I love your energy. It's so calm and grounded, and you are full of infinite wisdom. So thank you for sharing that.
Well, thanks again, Mark. I really enjoyed this interview, and I hoped you enjoyed it as well. You can find the interview show notes by going to meditationfreedom.com/35. And as always, you're welcome to leave a comment or tweet it out. Next week, hopefully, I'll have the interview with Lama Surya Das ready for you to listen to, and I hope you'll enjoy that as well. And for today, that's all I've got, and I hope if you get a chance and you get back behind a computer, or perhaps you can do this through your mobile phone, please consider leaving a review on iTunes for the Meditation Freedom Podcast. It would be very helpful. It would allow iTunes to know that you're enjoying this podcast and that you support this podcast. And I'll just leave you with two more quotes. We have to dare to be ourselves, however frightening or strange that self may prove to be, says May Sarton. And then finally, a quote by Carl Gustav Jung. The privilege of a lifetime is to become who you truly are. Take care.
Thank you so much for joining us on the Meditation Freedom Podcast, where meditation meets daily life.